Hello, and welcome to episode 36 of The Winning Agenda. Tonight, our panelists include runner-up for both the 2014 Melbourne Regionals and the 2014 Australian Nationals, Liam Prasad.
Hey all, how are you doing?
Runner-up for the 2015 Melbourne Regionals and three-time Magic the Gathering Pro Tour competitor, Wilfie Horrig.
Hey everyone.
2014 Australian National Champion and 2014 World's Top 16 competitor, Jesse Marshall.
Howdy.
And I'm your host, Brian Holland, 2014 Australian Nationals Top 8 competitor. So a couple of weeks ago, we got some very exciting news this morning, in Australia. It was about...
you mean when we woke up?
When we woke up in the morning,
at
yeah.
like 11 a.m.
Mid-afternoon. I woke up at a normal time. And anyway, Data and Destiny, the new deluxe expansion for Netrunner, coming out reasonably quickly after Order and Chaos. I mean, I think we haven't had two deluxe expansions that close together. In terms of release schedule, I mean, that might be factually accurate, and if it is, I'm sure someone on the internet will be quick to correct me.
No, I think
but
it's accurate.
But we're very excited for it, and the most exciting thing about it, to me, is the inclusion of neutral runners. Obviously, there was a lot of speculation going around about what was going to be the runner side of this box, as we knew there's a 4-4-3 split. Some people were saying there's going to be a new faction, some people were saying there's going to be one runner of each faction, and the other speculation was neutral cards. So we have... not even neutral runners, they're mini factions, I think they're calling them, and most of the mini faction, like the depth and everything, will be included in this box. So, like, guys, what do we think? Are we excited? Like, I think it's a really cool direction to take things in. I think the mini factions will give it a little bit of design space outside of the color pie, as people say. Liam, you excited?
Certainly, definitely. As Brian said, like, there was a lot of speculation about what they're going to be, and personally, I was one of the people speculating that it was going to be a bunch of neutral runners, just because we'd kind of seen those cards harkened in, like, the access to Global Sec and the satellite uplink. The reference to neutral cards being linked to Link, which I wasn't necessarily expecting, but I did call Byroid AI... and Link orientated, and so I'm very happy that all three of the cards are those three, so I feel very good about it. But the mini factions, as I understand it, all could be replaced by the text line, these cards can play bloody bloody blah without paying the influence, so they're kind of Professor-esque in that regard. Now, Professor hasn't seen much play, but that's only because he has one influence rather than 25. These all have 25. It's a big deal. It's a big fucking deal, y'all, and I think they're going to be fantastic, really good for the game, playing Lucky Finds for free, awesome.
That is not the case, however, Shields, I'm going to stop you there.
What?
It's been confirmed by Lucas that these cards, while they're not part of the other factions, they're still part of their own factions, so all runners still have to spend influence on neutral cards. I know there was a bit of confusion about this initially when they came out and when they were announced, but no, they will have to pay for their sources, they'll have to pay for their donut tagnesses, and they will have to pay for their Lucky Finds. So does that change your opinion of things?
Yes. I was really looking forward to playing a Donut to Gains deck, finally. And for everyone that's currently like swelling their heads and... you know,
thinking that you're trolling them?
Writhing me off as a person on deciding that I am, in fact, a massive troll called Banana Breath on the Frostmourne server, by the way. I was looking forward to playing a Donut to Gains deck with, like, neutral cards and maybe, like, 25 influence for imp or whatever. But I guess, you know, that's not going to be a thing. All right. Someone else talk about this. It's depressing me.
Jesse, you a fan?
Yeah, I think the idea of mini factions is really good. I'm looking forward to seeing what support we get for these runners. The fact that they can't play neutral cards is a sweet way for them to for the designers to leave open that design space in neutral cards for the future. I think neutral cards with influence cost is a way of introducing effects to the game that they don't want to give to any particular faction because it would make them too powerful comparative to the others. And this allows them to keep doing that and not exempt these three runners from that effect of the neutral cards influence cost. I also really like the way that they've taken these three cards in terms of the direction of them. You know, you've got a really unique space within a game like this.
Just say you love the flavor of the cards, Jesse. You don't have to work around it. Just say that you love the flavor of each of these cards. Just say it.
I was going to go to the mechanics, but I also love the flavor. I think the flavor of them is fantastic. The art is great. The colors are really good. And the full bleed effect on Apex and the way the art just bleeds out to the sides of the card looks really good. But in terms of the mechanics, when you are breaking out from the faction, from the constraints of factions and designing new cards, it can be a really challenging thing as a designer. And I think what they've done here, particularly with Apex and Adam, to give them a sort of unique place in the game, allow them to interact with the factions by having higher influence costs, but also have some sort of individual identity playing cards face down. In the case of Apex, we aren't entirely sure at this stage whether those face down cards are simply sort of food for Apex's cards like Heartbeat, or whether you will be able to also turn them face up. We're going to assume that there's going to be some way to turn them face up, even if it's not just a straight you can turn it face up for its install cost.
Well, they might also be, because the only card we've seen spoiled of any of the mini factions is Heartbeat, as you said, so it could just be food for Heartbeat. But I mean, I imagine that there's other cards in Apex's faction that rely on these having X face down cards or whatever. I'd be very surprised if there was an ability that let you turn those cards face up and use them.
Yeah, it also says you can install a card face down, so to me that says you can install an event face down.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, you definitely should be able
yeah,
to.
Yeah, you can install yep. any card, yeah.
Okay. Which is interesting, because it makes me think that there won't be any way to turn them face up. And
That's what I was thinking as well.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I didn't think of the event interaction.
I feel like, given the way it's worded, it probably will just be fodder for the AI, which is so cool, just by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah,
it's
cool.
Super, super cool. It's like, we talked about titanium ribs last week, and this is just that ability plus a million. Like, the ability to use this console to trash these face-down cards rather than cards from hand, given that you can install these face-down cards ahead of time, is such a big deal. I actually love it. I think titanium ribs is probably a card that probably shouldn't have been printed. Anyone?
Well, there's a lot of cards that shouldn't have been printed, I guess.
shut me down,
like,
here?
Like, yeah, yeah. I mean, like
I feel like
whatever.
I'm going deep on the whole wallpaper thing. But
I mean, we don't need to go deep on this subject, but every card that is printed is there for a reason. There's somebody who's playing the game for different reasons than what we play the game, and they love titanium ribs for whatever reason that is. And that's fine. Like, they can't just print every single card and have it be amazing. But
yeah,
like,
I take that back. Everyone that plays titanium ribs, I love you and you are good people.
So Wilfie, like, I know you're a huge fan of how these cards look, as you were confiding in me in private earlier. What do you think?
I think they're all really interesting ideas. I like especially the Byroid one, and not just because it speaks to me personally, but I think that directives, like at the time of this episode, like while we're recording this, we still don't know what any of the directives are, and they're the ones which I think have the most potential to make the Byroid runner into like a real faction. Like the idea that you can play this Byroid runner not just in terms of the cards that you play, but with the identity totally differently to another person who's playing totally different directives entirely, I think is really cool.
Yeah, just open up the window to some wild speculation. I've seen some people online say that maybe the directives are something to do with a different way to earn agenda points, but I think someone pointed out to me that it's the directives in the board game are something that give you like a bonus and a penalty for having that bonus, which I think is a mechanic I've seen in a lot of other of FFG's games. So it could be something as simple as you have plus one link, but you can only run once per turn. Like that, I mean, that's obviously a bad card, but something like that, where you get a bonus, but there's also a drawback to some degree. I'm actually really excited about Adam probably the most. The one I'm least excited for at the moment, again, we've seen none of the other faction cards, is, what's her name?
Sunny
the Global Sec agent, who's a blank runner with 50 minimums excise, 25 influence, obviously, and 2 link. So, I mean, your underworld contacts are turning on straight away. I mean, it would, at the current meta, Jesse, would you play a runner that was blank but had 2 link?
Well, it's really interesting because it seems like it's going to be a card that will have a very strong economy engine. Even if you just play sort of underworld contacts and other drip economy, you know, daily cast, Earthrise Hotel, I mean, I'm just spitballing here. You might not need to do all those things if you've got underworld contacts. But the idea that you can build something that without spending any of its influence is going to have a really solid economy base off resources, and then you can think about spending your influence on the most powerful faction cards to design in a lot of different ways, means that this is a very flexible identity. Because when you think about what factions can do, shapers will sort of lead you in a particular way, criminals will lead you in a particular way with their powerful cards, and then you'll use your influence to supplement that. If this has just a very strong economy engine, and you can use your a much higher influence value to get really impactful cards from the factions, I think this is going to be a blank canvas and a really versatile ID that can go in a ton of different ways.
Wilfie, what about you?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a bit early to say without knowing what the cards are, but I think that's a good point, that if you can get a good neutral economy engine, it really gives you a lot of flexibility as to what especially powerful cards you want to import. And I think the 25 influences are most important things about these factions is that we'll be able to see strategies which we haven't seen go together before. Like, people seem to like custom biotics a lot because of the ability to do that, you know, play cards together which don't go together in regular Netrunner. I think this just takes that to a new level.
It's also interesting, I guess, if you're maybe a newer player and you might be picking this up along with the core set or a couple of other data packs, that Sunny's ability of having two natural link might be really good against some of the trace dedicated NBN decks that we might see coming out of here. Obviously, we've seen Sync, which is one of the flip identities. Interesting that I just learned recently that you can actually flip it back and forth between its two abilities, which is really cool. I also really like, is it Lily Lockwell, the asset? So it's an assets 3 to res, doesn't have a trash cost, but when you res, sorry, we don't know the trash cost. When you res her, you draw 3 cards, and she has an ability, click, remove a tag, and search R&D for a operation and put it on top of R&D, which I think is a really cool thing to do with tags, like making tags into something other than just a way for the corp to open a window to kill you, I think is some really good design space. Jesse, do you agree?
Yeah, NBN only has a limited number of ways to punish the runner for having tags. We've got another one here in the All-Seeing Eye, which may be a more efficient way to trash resources. We'll talk about that more later. But the fact, yeah, being able to turn it into an economy for the corp itself is really powerful, particularly seeing as NBN's economy is probably the weakest thing about it. I mean, I know this doesn't turn it into cash, but it turns it into cards, which is something NBN's been reasonably good at. But in terms of the design space and where that could potentially go, I could envision a card that allows you to remove tags to gain credits or to gain some other benefit, which is really excellent design space, as you said, Brian.
So a couple of the other cards that we've seen, which we don't have the full spoiler so much because a lot of them are cut off in the image, but like Launch Campaign, which looks really cool. That's a 1-to-res asset, which is a drip economy. I think you get 2 at the start of your turn, like a daily cast. The only thing we're not sure of is the trash cost. So, Wilfie, will you be excited for this card? What does the trash cost have to be to have this replace something like a mental health clinic?
Yeah, I think this card is really good. Well, assuming the trash cost isn't especially low, just because it's basically the only neutral economy card that we have so far that gives you money immediately when you res it. I think that's really, really important for a card to do. And so even if it's not that efficient as the game goes later, like, I think that's actually not so bad that it pays out immediately. Like, I think compared to Path Campaign, it's much better because, one, if you're protecting it, it doesn't take up a remote space, which is a resource as well, you know, whether you need to use your ice to defend it. And two, it gives you, on the most important turns, which are the turns immediately after you res it, it gives you more money than Path Campaign does. And so, assuming that it has a trash cost of like 2 or up, I think 1 is a bit low. I think it will be very playable, but hopefully we'll get to see what that is soon.
And then the other interesting card was Windfall, which is a 0-cost runner event. What is it? You shuffle your stack, and then you trash the top card of your stack and gain credits equal to its install cost. Is that correct?
Yeah. So the only thing that this won't trigger off is events. So
yes.
If as long as the top card of your stack after you shuffle is not an event, you're going to be gaining some amount of credits. Obviously, the incentive to play higher cost cards is not really something that you want to be looking at in terms of designing your deck around that. But if you can maximize the percentage chances that you're going to be getting upwards of 3 credits from this, then I guess it's decent.
So, yeah, I think this box is due out probably in October, I would say, if we're thinking that there's still 3 packs to come in this cycle, and it's FFG website says Q3, but, like, I'm really excited for it. Like, I was really excited for Order and Chaos, but I want to say I'm even more excited for this one. I really look forward to seeing the spoilers in the coming months, hopefully. I know people like to avoid spoilers for some reason, but I just can't get enough of them, and I think I speak for everybody in this podcast because we love to start playtesting early.
Yeah, it's so cool. It's, like, above and beyond. I think just, like someone else said on this podcast, like, opening a pack should be a part of the procedural memory rather than like a surprise.
I think it was Scream Bear.
Scream Bear?
I think so.
Was that Scream Bear?
Yeah.
Seeing as Wolfie is in fact Scream Bear, then yes,
we definitely shouldn't say that Wolfie Scream Bear, because people will believe it. But like, if you're somebody who likes opening their pack of Netrunner cards, like it's a booster pack of a CCG, that's great. But I do not understand you, and that's fine. So we're going to move on. We've got a deck tech from Mr. Liam Prasad. What Shieldsy brew do you have for us?
Yeah, it's actually kind of an old-school brew that's seen a very recent revamp, and the recent revamp has been the Career Fair. It's
So this is literally any one of your runner decks that you're playing at the moment then, because it's got Career Fair in it?
Yes. I love this card so much. I really do love this card that much. Career Fair is, in my eyes, better than Sure Gamble and worth paying influence for. I'm actually looking for recommendations at the moment on a deck sleeve that I could play Career Fairs in infinitely. Currently, I'm settled on Dragon Shields because they shuffle the best long term. If anyone has any stronger recommendations, please let me know. Otherwise, this is one of the many decks I'm putting Career Fair in. It's a Riel Kit Peddler Shaper deck. Not playing R&D Interface, as some listeners of the last episode may notice I foreshadowed towards. Rather, I'm playing a combination of Nerva Agent and Woman in the Red Dress. And basically the plan is to place a Nerva Agent and use Kit's very aggressive ability to run every turn. Now, Riel can make a code gate every turn, so naturally I'm playing a lot of code gate breakers. The best code gate breaker en masse is not Gordian Blade, it's not Torch. The best code gate breaker en masse is Refractor. I can back it up with Lockpick. I can back it up with a Ghost Runner. I don't think this list is playing Ghost Runner, though. I think I've forgotten that, because it's really just that easy to put it together. So it's a standard, like, very fast aggro list playing Woman in the Red Dress. And the reason you play this is that you get to find the Refractor and then tutor for Nerve Agent and then use two or three recurring credits every turn to make at least one run on HQ every turn. And the reason you want a Woman in the Red Dress is because the strategy is so linear. So the linearity of the strategy means that if the Corph is running fast advance, then they can just play off the top because they can just score out of like a sand or score with Biotic Labor. And if they're playing some decent middle or large ice, then they can put that on the remote. And then what they can do is just draw the agents and put that in the remote. If they have some middle or large ice again, they can just put that on HQ. So it's kind of weird because this is a Shaper deck focused on HQ around Nerve Agent. And Woman in the Red Dress actually lets you solve all these issues really elegantly. They let you trigger it on your turn, which means that you can always get to know whether an agenda, if they reveal one, is in HQ or R&D. If it's on R&D, you just, like, run it. You just, like, mod it up a lady and run there. Or you test run a femme and you run there. Or you test run the femme, then scavenge it there, and then you run there, if you want to do that repeatedly. Or if the HQ, if the agenda makes its way into HQ, you test run the femme onto HQ, and you just run there repeatedly. And guess what? You have a Nerve Agent, because you have a code siphon, and you have self-modifying code.
And so what's the backbone for the deck? Like, how are you putting this all together? Are you playing a Contax?
No. I'm playing Career Fair. That card's nuts.
and so you're not putting your contacts into play with Career Fair. What are you putting into play with Career Fair?
Daily Casts and Authorized Hotels and Woman in the Red Dress. The big downside to Woman in the Red Dress at this point has been that she's a virtual resource, which has really seen no way to put her into play other than paying 3 credits. She's a very aggressively orientated card, which means paying 3 credits in an aggressively orientated deck, which means, frankly, paying a full 3 credits at 1 cost per click. So that's 3 clicks. But in this deck with Career Fairs, you can put her in for a net 0 or a net 1 click with Career Fair. Big deal. Big, massive motherfucking deal. You can put her into play with just 1 Career Fair in the early turns of the game, which puts this deck above and beyond. I've played this deck a lot. I took this deck to the Ballarat Store Champs and won with it.
But it's changed a lot since then, right? That was a while ago.
Not really, like...
It's just really. The Career Fairs?
Just the Career Fairs,
I thought you were playing
really.
Desperado back then as well.
I was. I'm still playing 1 Desperado, just because it's so good. So what I've done is I've cut 1 Desperado for 3 Career Fairs, and I've cut a Femme Fatale for Stimhack. And there was actually one other reason behind this, and there was a fellow on NetrunnerDB, just so everyone knows exactly how good NetrunnerDB is. There was one fellow on NetrunnerDB by the name of Poorhouse. Big fan is Poorhouse, as I can gather. He loves Diesel in this list, and he's played to death, and he thinks Diesel is fantastic. I tested it out, and you know what? Diesel is fantastic in this list. It's massive. You get to discard the Femme Fatale at the end of your turn after you Diesel, which means you can test run the back, because otherwise you can't test run it. It means you can find your lady at good speed enough to find the modded, or it means you can install self-modifying code for the Nerve Agent earlier in the game, which is exactly where you want to be. And yeah, it means you're down to one Desperado in this particular build of the list. I'm running 0.04 at this point, which is down to one Desperado. But frankly, that's okay, because you don't need the fifth memory a lot of the time. And Desperado is powerful enough that anytime you draw it, you just play it and you win. So I would like more, but Career Fair, I think three Career Fairs is slightly, just ever so slightly, more powerful than the second Desperado. That's how good Career Fair is.
How do you go against control deck Shieldsy, where the agenda density is lower and maybe they've got two or sometimes even three layers of ice in front of those servers, so Kit's ability doesn't come up as often?
It's kind of interesting, because normally I build like these 80-20 or maybe like 75-25 lists, and you know, I'm very much at peace with just losing those games where I'm not in the correct matchup. But Woman in the Red Dress is so flexible and so powerful that it actually overcomes all of these humps. So against those kind of slower, like slow mid-range or like light control decks that do play very low agenda density, maybe like 7-3 for fives and maybe like domestic sleepers and 5-3s, you do get to play down the Woman in the Red Dress. And because Earthrise Hotel and Daily Casts work even when you don't play the Career Fair for them, you can just play like a mid-range build and use Woman in the Red Dress to run exactly when you know you need to, which works in your favor. It's not perfect, because they still build a remote that you basically can't get into without spending all of your resources. And regardless of how you look at it with this deck, you can't really gain credits at more than one credit per click. So getting into that remote can be very difficult, because you want to use your Femme on HQ, right? Because it's all about the Nerve Agent. So if you don't use your Femme on HQ, you're going to be using it on that remote. But if you're using it on that remote, you can't be proactive.
Oh, well, people are already typing up a response to ask you if you've considered using London Library.
I mean,
yes. I played against a list. Local player Sam, who is famous for having the quote-unquote functional industrial genomics deck. There's your shout out, Sam. He's a great guy. He's a great player, and he was playing a Haley deck with London Library and Femme spam, and it was a pain in the ass. It really was. Like, it was pretty good. Like, I'm not going to say it was efficient in terms of clicks, and it might not be what you want to do in an aggressive deck. But you were pointing out this issue that you're having about where you want to deploy your Femme. Had you considered London Library at all?
Oh, yeah, sure. But the thing is, the times you need London Library for that kind of, like, Femme Fatale versatility, one, you could just be playing a second Femme Fatale, in which case you can take that influence from the Stim hack. If your metagame looks a lot like you need a second Femme Fatale in play, take that influence from the Stim hack. Yeah, you're going to have a little bit less self-modifying code versatility. You're going to have your Cerebus a little bit less. You're going to have your, like, Refractor or your big Nerve Agent runs a little bit less. But at the same time, you're going to have a second Femme to test run for, which over those slightly slower games that do last, you know, somewhere between, I guess, like 12 and 18 turns, yeah, the second Femme is going to come fantastically, because you have a Desperado that you can find, and that you have second Femme that you can go like Femme, Cloak, Lady, Refractor. And that's a fantastic rig. So it's great in those slightly slower builds. But the thing is, those Glacier matchups are seen so rarely, because the Glacier matchup we're talking about here isn't a Replicating Perfection build. It's a Haas Byroid Glacier build, or it's an NBN Splashing Heimdall Glacier build. Those matchups come up so rarely that it's not really worth consideration.
Yeah, I was going to say, what would you say the main benefits of the identity are in this kind of list? Is it like, the, would you say the main thing is that you can get into, your opponent doesn't get to score out of remotes early because they can't be safe with only one ice, or that, you know, you can get into HQ, build up nerve agent counters early, or some combination of those. Like, it seems like, because you seem to talk about that, it's very hard to get credits at more than one click, one credit per click, so it seems like Kate might be more helpful with that entire game plan.
Both of these factors are a big deal in this deck. The ability to run Nerve Agent early is the reason to play this deck. The main game is basically to fetch Nerve Agent ASAP and start running with it ASAP. The second factor to running Riel is that, yes, you can run remotes very, very early. And the third factor, which isn't really easily identifiable, but does come up a lot, is that you don't need a barrier breaker or a sentry breaker until at least, like, turn three. Most of the time it's, like, turn three. And this is a big deal, because the only sentry breaker that's running in this deck is the Femme. And the only way to really reliably fetch the Femme is with Test Run Scavenge, which means that you're going to use Diesel and your ability to draw cards as the runner to find this Scavenge Test Run Femme and discard the Femme if you do in fact draw it, to find your killer early, and you're going to use Mothered to install your Lady early. And that's the big deal. The big deal is that you can reliably use Mothered to install Lady and Test Run Scavenge to install Femme. So really, all you're paying for is the Refractor. All you're really paying for is the Refractor. So your rig, the way the rig ends up working out is you pay like maybe 3 to 4 credits for the entire rig reliably, because when you can make every piece of ice into a code gate for the first 2 to 3 turns, you can draw cards to find the pieces you need to reliably make your economy work. And that's, I guess, the third advantage, and really what makes the deck work. The first two advantages, the ability to run a Nerve Agent early, and the ability to avoid a killer early, and the ability to run on remotes early against hyper-aggressive decks, these are both fantastic things. But the piece that makes this economy package come together is the fact that you don't need a killer or a fractor until at least turn 3 or 4.
That's all we have time for this week on the Winning Agenda. If you want to get in contact with us, you can shoot us an email to thewinningagenda@gmail.com. You can check out our Facebook page. Our like page is The Winning Agenda. If you want to be one of the cool kids, you can hit us up on Twitter @WinningAgenda. And if you love us so much you want to buy one of our playmats, you can jump onto inksplaymats.com, type in The Winning Agenda into the search bar, and pick one up there for a paltry $20. Very excited to speak to you all soon. We'll see you next week, guys.
See you next week.
Take it easy, everyone. Especially Poorhouse. That guy's gas.
Yeah, shout out to Poorhouse. We love you. Thanks for listening.
We love you.
Everyone, thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah.
And Poorhouse.
But mainly Poorhouse.
But especially Poorhouse. Everyone is certainly, like, supplementary to the Poorhouse. Yeah.
Cool, cool, cool. Can I just say, guys, that I've only just figured out the flavor behind Apex's ability. He's a virus, and he's spreading. So at the start, that's why he's so hard to kill. It's like Ultron in Age of Ultron. You have to kill all the robots.
Yeah, that's why otherwise, people are speculating that he wouldn't be able to take meat damage or whatever.
No, but that's what his ability is. He's putting out new things because he's spreading all over the place. Oh, my God.
He can still take knee damage, though,
right? Yeah, because you can destroy a server. It's like an Age of Ultron where you can destroy one robot, but you have to kill all the robots, right?
It's like you
can only kill one Agent Smith. You have to kill all the Agent Smiths.
Yeah. All the cards in hand are effectively another copy of Apex.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's some fucked up shit.
As long as you have your console. As long as he has a heartbeat.
And then at the end of the movie, though, it zooms in on, like, Kate's clone ship, and it, like, glows red a little bit. And, like, he's in there, too. And, oh, yeah, gas. All right. That's all we have time for this week. That's all.